Okay, next argument, next case, United States versus Miller, Mr. Erda.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Patrick Erda, and I represent the appellant in this case, Stacy Miller. 2 days before Stacy Miller's trial, his court-appointed attorney, Jim Cooley, who had been preparing for trial for several months, was found passed out in his car.
Not an unexpected piece of business, was it? 2 months before, he had been ill, and that's why a lawyer was wanted to back him up.
That's correct. He had been ill, but since that time, Your Honor, he had given no indication that he would be unable to continue.
But the specific reason for the appointment of the backup was to be available in the event illness overtook him.
That is correct. In the case when illness became apparent that he would not be able to continue with trial. And in this case, that happened 2 days before trial.
That was my question is that was not an unanticipated event. That is, at the time in December when the matter was set over, the agreement was that the lady who was appointed to back him up would be available by the 14th of January. He gave an extra 2 weeks, am I correct? Specifically so that she'd have more time to prepare herself in the event something happened.
Your Honor, that's correct, if he was unable to continue in December. But he was able to continue in December. And it was only
under the theory that you're espousing, that if he had become ill on the day of the trial, it would be impossible for the lady to take over at all. Or if it during the early part of the trial, while she's assisting in the trial, she was under an obligation, was she not, to prepare the matter for trial in anticipation of the illness of the lead counsel.
That is correct, if it appeared that the lead counsel would not be able to take
which
over.
Which was obvious in December, because that's why she was appointed.
Your Honor, it was... I would respectfully disagree that it was...
You mean that this contingency was not anticipated at all?
This particular contingency was not anticipated, but was anticipated...
Why was she appointed then?
She was appointed in case, in December, it became apparent that he was not able to continue.
But she was appointed in December.
That's correct, and he was able to return in December.
Well, he was there when she was appointed.
That's correct.
He was not ill or incapacitated when she was appointed.
Actually,
but he had been before.
Your Honor, actually at that point in time, it was unclear if he would be able to resume his duty.
Precisely, and so that's why she was appointed.
Correct, Your Honor.
With the obligation to prepare herself to trial.
That is correct, Your Honor.
And she was given 2 weeks more than she asked for in order to make that preparation.
That is correct, Your Honor, but she only had 2 days.
I think what Judge Brown is suggesting, it's not the continuance that's the problem, it's Ralston that's the problem.
Your Honor, it is our position that there are defects both with the continuance and with Ralston.
I don't see the problem with the continuance, because Judge Crabb had, by appointing Ralston, had taken measures to assure that there wouldn't be a failure of representation. And apparently the jury had already been selected, I guess, by a magistrate?
Actually, from the record, it appears that the jury was selected on the morning when Attorney Ralston made the motion for continuance.
What would the lady have done if she had more time to prepare?
Judge Bauer, she would have been able to introduce alibi witnesses.
From whence would she find these alibi witnesses?
Your Honor, there were several witnesses.
Yes, I want to know where she would have found these witnesses if she had more time.
In the files of Mr. Cooley. And Mr. Cooley.
So that they were available to her then?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And Mr. Cooley was aware of them beforehand?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And he had elected not to use them as an alibi witness on the lists.
It is unclear from the record what Mr. Cooley was intending to do. He did not put them on the list. That's correct, Your Honor.
It's clear that he didn't give it notice, although under your theory at least, he had notice of the existence. And what would they have testified to? Is that part of our record?
That is not part of the record because Attorney Ralston failed to make an offer of proof when the alibi witnesses were excluded. And that also goes to the
ineffectiveness. When did you begin your participation in these proceedings?
I began my participation over the summer when I was appointed.
By this court?
Yes, Your Honor.
Did you make any attempt to find out from those alibi witnesses what they would have testified to had they been called?
No, Your Honor. It was our position that it was outside the record.
It is.
Okay.
But you're not precluded from expanding the record down in the trial court, are you?
No, Your Honor.
The alternative procedure would have been forget about the continuance, because it doesn't seem that Judge Crabb is the one at fault, and bring the usual, 2255, in which you claim that these lawyers were ineffective, and then as Judge Bauer suggests, you go find the alibi witnesses so you could show that there was actual prejudice.
That's correct, Your Honor. But we don't contend that Judge Crabb was at fault, per se. What we contend is that this was a tragic occurrence in the life of this lawyer, and it was completely unanticipated.
That's wrong, because Ralston should have known that. First of all, she was told she was standby counsel. She's not supposed to just sit on your rear end. And since this person has a mental problem that is recurrent, not isolated, so she was careless.
Your Honor, while she had an obligation to prepare, she did not have an obligation to prepare as lead counsel. The court did not appoint.
Well, what's preparing? Preparing means you're prepared to try the case.
Your Honor, her obligations as standby counsel took effect once it became apparent that Mr. Cooley could not go forward, and that was only 2 days.
This is like having a theater understudy who hasn't bothered to memorize her lines because she didn't know that the star was going to be out.
Well, Your Honor, I was...
Are you suggesting, by the way, that the lady was incompetent?
No, Your Honor.
Are you suggesting that she had produced incompetent counsel during the trial?
Yes, Your Honor. Her assistant.
Why? How can she not be incompetent and nevertheless be incompetent during the trial?
Well, Your Honor, she herself admitted that she was unprepared. That was
incompetent, isn't it? If you're told directly in December to prepare yourself for trial in the event this you're going to be there, and she doesn't, isn't that incompetence?
You might. Yes,
no,
you might.
I might. I want to know what you would call it if it isn't incompetent.
I think that she wasn't. She was not prepared because she read the order in the wrong way.
No. How could you read the order in the wrong way when you're appointed to represent somebody and be prepared to try the case? What other way would you read it?
The order does not say.
What does it say?
The order says that in the possibility that Mr. Cooley is not able to continue.
There you go.
And that possibility became a fact only 2 days before trial.
But the possibility existed in December when she was appointed.
The understudy
point.
Analogy. You know, what you're doing, your problem is you're carrying water on both shoulders. Because in order to strengthen your continuance case, you defend Ralston's lack of preparation. But of course, right, all you do is undermine your stronger argument.
Well, Your Honor, I see that my light is on, so I'd like to save my stronger argument for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Fitzroy?
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm John Vaudry. I represent the United States. I represent the United States Trial Court and also here today. I think one of the themes that sort of runs through the brief, the initial brief and the reply brief and then today is this sort of the proof of a lack of effective performance, focusing on essentially the alibi witnesses. And I'd like to just turn quickly to that, or first to that. I think the point made by the court is the point that I think needs to be emphasized. There was no proffer. Judge Crabb didn't know what these witnesses would say or wouldn't say. There were three witnesses named, one of whom was actually called, a woman named Shanika Ware. She was not allowed to testify to specifics about alibi, although, as I point out in my brief, when she's asked in direct examination, she was actually asked, do you know where Stacy Miller was or were you with him on May 6th or May 7th, 2 days that were, you know, 3 or 4 days in advance of the actual drug deal. That's a pretty specific, would need to be a pretty specific alibi. The drug sales took place between about around 3:30 and then again at 5-ish or so on May 10th of 2001, I'm sorry. And her testimony, such as it was proffered, I guess, and was certainly not an alibi. The other two witnesses, there wasn't any proffer, and I think essentially the argument is today, from Mr. Miller's counsel, is that we brought no 2255. We've not developed the record at all as to what these witnesses would have said, there was no proffer at the district court. Therefore, you should presume that they would have testified in a very effective way, such that there's a probability the result would have been different. And you should essentially reward the defendant in that sense by the lack of a record. And that simply is not, it's not good law, it's not good policy.
Are alibi witnesses ever prosecuted for perjury?
As a matter of fact, I can answer this question. The answer is yes, indeed they have been. As a matter of fact, in the Accardo case, the only two people who went to penitentiary were alibi witnesses who testified.
I was going to say that
the person is convicted, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt, that pretty much casts the alibi witness in the role of perjurer.
I would have to say that in this case it's probably even stronger than that. And one thing that really, when we're talking about the ultimate test here, is there a fair probability that the result would have been different? I certainly argued, and I think the jury probably found, that the alibi witness, Mr. Morgan, did not testify truthfully. There was actually testimony from Mr. Winfield, the co-defendant who pleaded guilty, that leading up to trial, Mr. Miller had said to him, here's how I'm going to beat the rat. I've got two of my buddies coming up from Chicago, and he remembered one of them was Robert or something, and one of them was Carlton, this other fellow, Carlton Higgins, who didn't show that day. He says, I'm going to beat the rat because my two buddies are going to come up here, and they're going to say I was in Chicago. So the jury heard that testimony. They also heard testimony from a detective, Detective Twing, who testified that sometime prior to this trial, and this was a long ongoing investigation that ultimately resulted in this trial, but the testimony was that Stacy Miller had offered to have a couple of people come forward and talk to the cops. And when the detective said, well, why would they do that? Mr. Miller said, because I control what people say. And one of the points made to the jury through that testimony and Mr. Winfield's testimony was, this alibi is a bunch of hooey, because we not only is inconsistent with the facts, it is you've heard through Mr. Miller's own words, as he said to Mr. Winfield and as he said to Detective Twing, that he's going to do this, and he went ahead and did it, at least with one of the witnesses. So I think the point of that is that as it relates to whether there's any fair probability that this result could have been different if these three witnesses might have testified to something that we don't know what that is, there's really no fair probability of that. Going back to the point of Ms. Ralston and this whole appointment, Judge Crabb could have done nothing else. We confronted, I guess Judge Crabb more than I, obviously, on December 10th, a really very sad situation when Mr. Cooley couldn't proceed. November 19th. And Judge Crabb immediately put the trial off. I remember it vividly. I literally took Mr. Cooley by the hand and took him to the bench because he was really incapable at that point of doing anything. He hadn't talked to his client yet and so on. Trial gets put off. She immediately puts it off a second time to December 10th. After December 10th, she puts it off again when there's a request. And she, as the questions point out, she put it off longer than apparently was needed for substitute counsel. The record makes it very clear that substitute counsel had plenty of time to be prepared on what, let's face it, I think, as I put out in the brief, was a pretty straightforward government case. There is some argument in the reply brief that the government has conceded that she wasn't, or conceded that she was unprepared, and that essentially we've argued that she should have been prepared. I think that's sort of misleading in this sense. The question is whether we do not concede that she was constitutionally ineffective. I'll tell you that. But the proof is, what's the performance? Could she have done more? She said she wasn't prepared. And if that was the test, then there are a lot of cases where we could just stop right now. We wouldn't even, the case could be sent back, because I've had more than I can imagine lawyers who've gotten up and said, "Judge, I'm not really ready to go yet. I need a continuance." And the judge says, "You can't have a continuance." And the lawyer says, "Well, then I'm really not going to be prepared to try this case." If the lawyer wants to fall on their sword and say those things in the record, obviously they can't be stopped. But that does not, that's not the end of this court's analysis. You look at what she did in the trial. She cross-examined Mr. Winfield. She did not object to the evidence, and it hasn't been addressed here today, and I addressed it in the brief. What I contend is clearly integrally related evidence, the fact that the cop had seen the guy a couple days before, the fact that Mr. Winfield knew him. She didn't object to that. Otherwise, she tried a pretty clean case. The day before, I said, "Look, here are the seven witnesses we're going to call. The only two that make any difference are these two. Here's what I'm going to ask them. Here's my overview of the evidence." So the bottom line is, her performance shows that whether she says she was unprepared, whether the argument is, look at the record, she didn't do this or that, her performance shows that she was prepared enough to try what was a pretty straightforward case.
Thank you. Mr. Petrillo. Mr. Erda, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
Mr. Erda, I don't want you to get the opinion that I think you've done a bad job on the appeal. I think you've done a splendid job on the appeal, and you've also preserved the incompetent question for 2255, which is where it's appropriate.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So you haven't shot yourself in the foot. I just wanted to point out
it's reassuring to know, Your Honor.
You got stuck with the two problems which are diametrically opposed, and you selected one as opposed to the other, and I think you made the right selection, but there you...
And I'd like to talk a little bit more about the motion to continue. This court, from your questions to me and to Mr. Vaudry, has assumed that there were current mental problems with Mr. Cooley. There is no evidence and no indication from the record that there are recurrent mental problems with
him. What was his problem? What?
All that we know from the record is that he was intubated. So a tube was stuck down his throat 2 days before trial. And we know that that was the problem 2 days before trial. I'm not sure what his problems were on the 19th of November and then in December. Secondly,
I thought he had depression.
During November and December, I think you're right.
That's a chronic condition. You don't just have an episode.
That's true, Your Honor, but again, the record indicates that 2 days before trial, they stuck a tube down his throat, which usually isn't part of the remedy for depression. The real question is, when faced with an unprepared counsel...
Yeah, but again, that's the understudy problem. It's like saying, "Oh, I didn't think the star would, you know, trip on her, trip on a banana peel before the performance, so I didn't bother to learn my lines."
You're right, Your Honor, but when the understudy is shown to not know the lines, that doesn't mean that the show has to go on. Judge Crabb knew that the...
That's true.
The district court and the government both did not challenge Ms. Ralston when she said she was unprepared. So the question we have to consider is, why did the trial court make the trial go on?
Mr. Vaudry gave the answer. You can't have a lawyer bootstrapping his way into a continuance by saying, "Oh, I have to have a continuance, I'm not prepared."
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's why this court has established a number of factors to evaluate a continuance. I see that my light is on.
Well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, well, we thank you for your efforts.
You're welcome.